Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
Welcome back to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. I'm Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And it is time for our mid-month check-in. It is the month of June. Summer is well on its way here in Los Angeles. It is.
What do you mean, well on its way? It's been here since last month. It's so hot.
How are you doing, Rira?
I'm doing well. So this month is going to be a little bit different because we're not doing new releases for this month.
Yeah, we have some exciting news, though. We are launching our website.
Finally!
For a long time, Books and Boba linked directly to our show site from Simplecast. But as of the time you hear this podcast, we will have a full-fledged website where you can take a look at our past picks. Find all the links to our Goodreads groups and our podcast, and also contact us if you want to suggest things, or you know, if you are a publisher needing of coverage for your Asian American or Asian author.
Yeah,
we are open to that as well.
I love getting arcs, and I love meeting people who create things who are Asian American, because it's still a very small pond, and it's nice to like meet new people.
Yeah. And as a part of that, we are moving our new release coverage to our blog on the website. That way we can focus more on news and discussion on our podcasts.
I mean, we definitely want to interview more authors.
Yeah.
And since like I read more than one book a month, I want to talk about those books as well.
Yeah, and we're actually in the process of lining up a couple interviews.
Yep.
And hopefully we'll have a lot more non-news content coming up.
More like one-on-one author interviews.
I'm excited.
So this month, I've been just... was it this month that Terrace House came out with the second half of its...
I have not caught up with Terrace House.
Okay, well, I watched it all in like a week of its release. And I like... become like very obsessed. I've been watching Terrace House since it came out on Netflix, like from the very beginning, and it was agony waiting for like every 8 episodes to get uploaded.
Is this new one the one with the lush lady?
The lush lady?
The one that likes to drink?
Oh, Sana. Sana is my queen. I love her. Yes, she's in it.
I've heard a lot of news about her. It's all over my social media.
She's amazing. Opening New Doors is pretty great. I'm so glad that they're back in Japan. Mm. Also, I've been catching up on E3 news. That's been my life for the past couple days.
It is E3 here in Los Angeles, and we're not a video game podcast.
No, we're not, but I play a lot of video games.
You know what I've noticed this year? A lot of games are now drawing from Three Kingdoms era lore for their new expansion pack.
Yep.
And it's like, Chinese history is coming back. It's not just samurais, guys. There's other cultures too.
I mean, a lot of video games still come out from Japan. So it's not like it's white people.
Japan
just
loves
doing...
Three Kingdoms.
They do. They really do.
They love the romance of the Three Kingdoms. And that has been our video game minute. Let's get back to books, shall we?
we have other interests. It's not like we just read books.
We should just start another podcast.
No, you have like 5 and I have like 2, so.
Well, let's get into the book news of the month. Rira has graciously put together our monthly list of publishing news. Yeah. I guess our first story... Kids Can Press acquired world rights to the picture book One Girl Equals One 111 Trees, written by Rena Singh and illustrated by Marion Farrer. The book depicts the efforts of one man who turned a desert village in India into an oasis that is not only safe for girls, but celebrates them as well. Publication is scheduled for fall 2020.
And next on our news is First Second Bought Alina Chow's Marshmallow and Jordan, a middle grade graphic novel about Jordan, a former star youth basketball player who became paralyzed from the waist down after an accident, who befriends Marshmallow, a magical elephant who helps her discover that water polo can be the sport in which she can continue her athletic dreams. Publication is slated for 2020. Man, 2020 is going to be like the year where like all the Asian authors are gonna come out with their books.
A lot of kids and middle grade books too, which is pretty good.
Yeah, middle grade is where it's at, you guys.
Yeah. It's when you develop your sense of self, I guess.
I just really like middle grade books, even though I'm like totally not in the demographic for it.
Norton Young Readers bought Paula Yu's debut YA nonfiction book about Vincent Chin, a Chinese American who was killed at the hands of two white auto workers in Detroit in 1982, and how his death sparked the Asian American civil rights movement. Publication is slated for 2020. Now, Rira, how familiar are you about the Vincent Chin case?
So I didn't know about it until after I moved to LA, and once I moved to LA, like, and became part of the Asian American community here, like, people started educating me on some Asian American history, and it's really weird because it's not like I lived in like places where there were no Asians, but like Asian American history really wasn't part of my curriculum, and it really wasn't brought up in a lot of Asian American communities, like in Atlanta or in New York.
And you went to some pretty like fancy schools in New York.
One fancy school. But yeah, like no one really brought it up. And I was really shocked that like that wasn't taught in high school textbooks, because it just seemed to be such a crucial part in how Asian Americans like fought for civil rights.
Right.
Yeah, but I'm really glad that Paula Yu is coming out with a YA nonfiction book, because that means that it's going to reach younger audiences, right, and they're going to catch on before they go to college like I did.
Yeah, and teachers can, you know, put it into their curriculum or at least on their bookshelves for other kids to read and ask about. Because, yeah, a lot of times our history, especially if even like I was raised in Southern California in like the SGV and very diverse, very heavily Asian area of the country. And even then, we didn't, like, when we talked about civil rights at school, especially in, like, middle school and high school, it was mostly about the black and white dynamic.
Yeah.
Right? It was the black community fighting civil rights. You didn't really touch on things like Vincent Chin, how that galvanized Asian Americans. Didn't really touch on even, like, the Cesar Chavez, like, movement. Mm-hmm. It was just very much like Martin Luther King and, like, not even Malcolm X. It was just mainly Martin Luther King, I feel like. Yeah, like I didn't learn about Vincent Chin until I took my, like most people, Asian American history class in college that we had to, you know, elect to take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm from Georgia, and a lot of, like I remember in eighth grade, we had this class called Georgia Studies, and it was like pretty much like history of Georgia. Yeah. So there was a lot of like history on slavery, obviously, and like just how like the Confederates lost, but they put it in such pretty words. It was kind of like a rosy picture of the South during the Civil War. And I'm like, that's not, I mean, slaves are bad. Like, slavery is bad. Why are they trying to, like, whitewash this? But
did you learn, was it taught to you as the War of Northern Aggression when you were young?
No, it wasn't that bad, but it was, like, it was definitely, like, sugar-coated. And I'm like, this was, like, right after I had moved from New Jersey. So I like, went through, like, American history over there. And then as soon as I came down to Georgia, I pretty much took the same history class, but, like, from the Confederate point of view. And I was like, this is weird.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it was a very weird experience. But not a lot of Asian stuff in those classes, in those history classes.
I mean, it just goes to illustrate the power of having representation, not only in media, but also in history as well. Like, knowing the important aspects of what shapes you know, our culture today.
Yeah, my history classes didn't even cover the Chinese Exclusion Act, and that was like a really big deal.
Yeah, we didn't really touch that until maybe AP history, because that was like one of the required like potential subjects. But even then, you didn't really dive into like how terrible that law was.
Yeah, and also like I mentioned this in our the Sympathizer episode, but when we covered Vietnam, Vietnam War, like a lot of the Vietnamese refugee part of the history wasn't covered, and you didn't really get much of the perspective of the actual like people in Vietnam. It was more from like American GI, and
not even GI. It was mostly like the protest culture.
Protests, that was
what the history books focused on, is just how youth culture in America stop the war, quote unquote.
Yeah. Which was why, like, when I read The Sympathizer, I was like, oh, I'm learning so much. Like, they should have taught this in history class, but they didn't.
A lot of things they should have taught in history class.
This is why you should read more books by Asian and Asian American authors, because you learn a lot of
stuff.
We're
bringing that back.
Yes, so moving on, Simon Pulse acquired Lo and Lee's A Pho Love Story. This YA romantic comedy follows two Vietnamese-American teens who fall in love and must navigate their newfound relationship and their respective families' old feud about their competing neighborhood restaurants for years. Publication is set for spring 2020.
So like Romeo and Juliet, but
Romeo
pho
and
restaurants.
Juliet with pho restaurants.
This sounds like your vibe.
This sounds amazing. I want to read it as soon as it comes out. 2020.
Yeah. Such a fresh twist on a classic trope. Yeah.
I just like how we are at this point in Asian American literature where like Asian American characters can just be like it's not about their pain or suffering. I mean, sometimes there's pain and suffering, but like teenagers, like Asian American teens in books, they can just go to school, be in love, and not be all about like my immigrant parents.
Yeah.
I mean, those stories are very important, but it's like really nice that we're getting more variety, and I am very excited for this book, so I'm going to keep an eye on it.
Yeah. Next up, Erdman's Books for Young Readers acquired North American rights to Ranojoy Ghosh's No Place Like Home, a picture book about a polar bear searching for his home, even though he doesn't know yet what it might look like. Publication is planned for spring 2019.
You know, this is for younger readers, but I feel like I can relate. And our final publishing news is Delacorte acquired Anjali Q. Raoul's... Delacorte acquired Anjali Q. Raoul's debut middle grade novel, The Boy at the Back of the Class. The novel is about a 9-year-old student's plan to befriend the new kid in class, Amit, a refugee boy from Syria. Raouf is the founder and CEO of Making Her Story, a UK nonprofit working to fight human trafficking and gender-based abuses and crimes. Publication is slated for summer 2019.
Another middle grade novel that is...
I'm telling you, middle grade is where it's at. I do want to make a correction, because in our last episode, I mentioned Vanessa Hua's A River of Stars, and I got the publisher wrong.
Oh,
so the publisher is Ballantine Books and not Riverhead Books. I mean, I said it from the top of my head, but I wanted to make that correction because the publisher contacted me and was just like, thanks for the shout out, but like, it's Ballantine Books. And I was like, oh. Sorry,
our bad.
I'll make the correction.
Corrections and retractions. And that's our new publishing news from Asian Asian American authors. I guess moving on to our check-in, we actually had some exciting news. We were able to catch a screening of To All the Boys I Love Before the Netflix.
You mean you were able to catch it? Because I was unable to go.
Oh, no.
I was... When I got the invitation, I was like, no, it's on a day I can't go. I want to go so bad.
I'm sorry. I totally forgot you weren't there. I'm just so used to you being there. I was able to catch a screening of To All the Boys I've Loved Before, the upcoming Netflix rom-com based on the book by Jenny Han. And Jenny Han was there in person to introduce things. And I'm not allowed to say anything about it until the week before it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
But I am allowed to give general impressions. And it was so good. It was like a very It was a teen rom-com, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, it's very, like, I don't know. You've read the book before, right?
No, I haven't. I will, because you got a signed copy for me.
Oh, yeah, it's in my car.
I was so excited. It, like, totally made up for me not being able to go and go to the screening. But, yeah, like, I've heard, like, the general, like, gist of the novel. And, yeah, it's definitely, like, a fluffy rom-com movie.
Very stylish, very, like, very cute and very, very high school.
It makes sense. Yeah. Like, the character is a high school student.
Yeah. Apparently, the dad is played by some guy from Sex and the City.
Oh.
My girlfriend is very excited.
She's excited for that part of the movie, but not, like, all the other parts?
She's excited for the whole movie, but she was especially excited when she recognized the guy. Apparently played one of the main character's boyfriends.
Yeah, so you liked it?
I did like it. I liked it a lot. And I think it's going to be a great follow-up, because it comes out on Netflix basically the week that Crazy Rich Asians comes out in theaters. So you can go watch Crazy Rich Asians in your theater, come home and put on To All the Boys I Love Before, and just have a Asian-American rom-com night.
Yep. And, you know, it's telling that you liked it, because you're definitely not in the demographic for this movie.
I can enjoy a rom-com.
You can enjoy a rom-com. That's true. I mean, I'm glad that rom-coms are coming back.
They are.
We haven't really had them for a long time in cinema.
The secret was Asian Americans.
I know.
The three main ones coming back right now, like two on Netflix, all feature Asian Americans. There's that one in that features Lucy Liu.
Oh, right, right.
There's To All Boys I Love Before, and there's Crazy Rich Asians. And there's another one coming out soon that's in production right now, starring Randall Park and Ali Wong.
Oh, that's right. That just broke, like, last week.
Written by Michael Colomko, and also co-starring, not starring, but co-starring, Keanu Reeves and Daniel Day-Kim.
Yeah, cool. That's a really nice cast.
It's going to be stacked. But yeah, can't say much more. I'm sure we're going to talk more with, we're trying to get Jenny Han on the podcast. Maybe some of the actors. Lana Condor is doing press soon too, so hopefully we can talk more about the movie, and by then you can read the book.
Yeah, I'm probably definitely going to read the book and maybe bring on a friend who has read the book, and then we can talk about it as if it's a discussion episode.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see the differences between the book and the movie, because I have not read the book.
I'm one of those people who try to read the book before the movie, so I will... Yeah, my goal is to read it before the movie comes out. So I will definitely try to do that.
You got 2 months, so plenty of time.
I do.
For a breezy YA rom-com.
So this isn't really news, but I saw it on my Twitter feed, and I wanted to share the link. I've definitely, like, shared it on the Books and Boba Twitter handle. But T. Bui, the author of The Best We Can Do, which was, like, a graphic memoir, and we interviewed her on this podcast. She wrote a webcomic, and it was, like, a very long webcomic, too. And it was about Southeast Asians who were once accepted by America as refugees, and now they are fighting to not be deported from this country. And, yeah, it's just being passed along the Asian-American community on Twitter.
T. Bui is one of the big voices in refugee rights and issues, and she does so through her comic. And if you haven't read her comic, her graphic novel, The Best We Could Do...
Graphic memoir.
Yeah.
We just call it graphic novel because we're so used to, like... It's like, oh, this has pictures in it, graphic novel, but it's a graphic memoir. It's based on her... Not based on, it's her
definitely
journey.
Pick it up. You know, works like that, works like The Sympathizer, works at her, and both her and Viet Thanh Nguyen have been putting out on a pretty constant clip the last few years, are very important pieces of, like, Asian American history and culture that is really important right now, especially in, you know, the current climate of anti-immigration, anti-refugee, and just, you know, like, overreach of powers to address these issues are really affecting our communities, especially the most vulnerable. So check it out. We're going to include the link in the show notes. and please share it with everyone.
Yeah, it definitely shows like an insight to like how like anti-immigration that's always kind of been a part of American history. It's not something new under the Trump administration. So yeah, definitely check it out. We have the link on Books and Boba, and definitely check out T-Boy's other works. I know she also has a picture book. Well, not a picture book. It's an illustrated book for young readers.
So yeah, moving on, let's check in on what we've been reading. And just a reminder, the June Books and Boba Book Club pick is Not Your Sidekick by C.B. Lee, who we actually got to meet yesterday.
Yeah, that was really weird. I met her at a bookstore, and like it was a panel of authors, and she wasn't in the panel. And I also ran into Sarah Kuhn, the author of Heroin Complex. Yeah. Those two were both in the audience, and I came to say hi to Sarah. And then she was like, oh, meet CB. And I was like, oh, hi. We're reading your book for this month.
It's funny because I've ran into CB a couple of times last year at Comic-Con. Last Monday at the Two All the Ways Love Before Screening. And also last Wednesday at the premiere of the new East West Players play where she was also a guest. So I've actually seen her a couple of times, but I didn't realize this was the first time you've met her.
Yeah, this was my first time. And like the really, really funny thing was when Sarah introduced me to her, she's like, oh, this is the host of like Books and Boba. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, are you Rira? And we're like, oh, hey, we've interacted on Twitter, but we've never seen each other before.
Yeah.
Aside from our profile pictures.
Full disclosure, we were supposed to have her on the podcast last year, and we kind of dropped the ball.
I feel so sorry, but we're definitely going to try to get her on the podcast.
No, we definitely are.
We definitely are. I feel so bad.
But yeah, that's the June book club pick. I have not gotten too far in it yet, but so far it's actually been a pretty breezy read.
It's a really fun read, and we definitely needed that in this book club because we've been reading like very heavy like emotional reads, and it's nice because like it's summer now and it's like I want to read something fun, and it's a great book for LGBTQ because you know, it features a bisexual Asian American character, and you also have a trans character as a side character. Which, funnily enough, I'm reading the sequel to Not Your Sidekick, which is Not Your Villain, and it's about that trans character.
Okay.
So the trans character is the main, like he's not gay. Is it he? It's been a while.
They.
Yeah. Like So yeah, the trans character is the protagonist in the sequel. So it's I'm gonna skim the first book again because I already read the first book, and I'm gonna finish the sequel, so by the time when we do our discussion episode I will be able to give a much more detailed not perspective, but like a much more detailed discussion for the podcast.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be reading it for the first time, so I'll have my fresh takes. What else are you reading, Rira?
So I'm in the middle of reading A River in Darkness by Masaji Ishikawa, and the book was on sale on Kindle for like $2, and I was like, okay, buying it, because so the book is a memoir, and it's about a Japanese national who is of Korean descent, and he and his family, they go to North Korea from Japan to be repatriated because this is like right after the war and Japan was like advocating for Koreans to get out of the country. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this on our Pachinko episode.
Yeah.
And the reason why like I really wanted to read this was because there was a character in Pachinko who goes back to North Korea.
Right, right.
Yeah, and I was just like, what happened to him? He probably died, but like but like you never see him again. He's never really brought up again. Mm-hmm. So reading this memoir has been like very like
But
not enlightening, because I already knew the horrific conditions that North Koreans went through during Kim Il-sung's rule and also like Kim Jong-un's rule.
Well, I mean, it's not far past that point where the Korean War happened, Civil War happens. Right?
Yeah. It's not that far away. And Yeah, like I've heard stories about like North Koreans, right? North Koreans who were born and raised there. But I haven't really heard much about like Korean Japanese and how they were treated in North Korea. And it's, you know, I already made my assumptions being like, well, like a lot of Koreans did not like Japanese people or like people who grew up in Japan, whether they were Korean, of Korean descent or not. But I already knew that like the Korean Japanese were going to be treated poorly. I just didn't realize how poorly. Wow. And the memoir, it's obviously it's very dark and it's also very short. It's 162 pages and it's so straightforward. It reads like a letter to the reader and like it definitely doesn't sugarcoat things. But at the same time, like you can there's a line in the book and it's about like how when you're like suffering so much, you end up laughing over like how bad you're suffering. And that's how I felt too, because like he would say something and I'm like, this is really dark, but it would make me laugh because I'm just like, this the ridiculousness of the whole whole thing, and about like how the famine happened and how like how bad the bureaucracy was in North Korea, and how like farmers they would plant when they would plant rice, they would like put the seedlings like too close together because it was like the Chuche style of farming. And because of that, like rice wouldn't grow properly because you have to have like enough space in between the seeds. Otherwise, it'll get tangled up. Mm-hmm. The farmers need this, but the government officials are like, we need more rice. And this is the best way to do it. And it pretty much like went like that for each industry. The government officials who had no experience in agriculture, in machinery, they would like come up with these ridiculous rules and like people suffered, and it was such a waste of lives because of other people's stupidity. And I learned a lot about how like in the beginning, like returnees, that's what they were called, returnees, they were treated like they were at the very, very bottom of like the caste system in North Korea. And towards the end of Kim Il-sung's rule, when like the famine hit and they were desperate for money, the returnees would get money from their Japanese relatives. So they went from at the bottom of the caste to like the top of the caste, because now they're like suddenly wealthy because of the money that they're receiving from their Japanese relatives. And it's just it's really interesting. So I'm in the middle of that. And also the memoir like briefly mentioned the Korean schools in Japan, like North Korean schools in Japan, and how like fucked up that was.
That was a plot point in
Pachita. Yeah, like I heard about these schools because I've covered Korean news before, and those schools were still around until 2011 or so. And yeah, like because the author, this is a memoir, so like the author was like talking about how weird the school was and how much propaganda was interweaved into their curriculum. So it was a very like interesting chapter, but I definitely recommend it. It's very short and you can probably get through it in like a day or two.
Yeah.
And I think it was like a month ago, but I finished Rainbirds by Clarissa Goenawan. I hope that's the right way to pronounce her name, but it's not really a murder mystery, but it's like a crime slice of life novel. And I really liked it. So there's really not much for me to say other than I really liked it.
Well, it's a crime novel, so you gotta
It's a crime slice of life novel. So like the murder never really gets solved. If you're gonna read this book, don't expect a conclusion to the murder, but it's about like
it's like the jumping off point, right?
Yeah, like pretty much the premise is a brother finds out that his sister got murdered in this very small town, and he goes to like you know, wrap up her affairs and stuff like that. And he ends up staying for like 6-7 months, or I guess like closer to a year at that point. And he pretty much like lives in the small town and tries to like figure out like what his sister's life was like. So that's pretty much the novel. And it was a very like nice read. So it was like a not simple, but it was like, oh, I can handle this. This isn't stressful at all. So I really liked it and I recommend it.
Yeah.
Marvin, what have you been reading?
I have been reading. Well, I've started reading our June pick, not your sidekick, but on the side I've been reading R.F. Kuang's Poppy War, as our listeners might remember from the last episode. I'm about 2/3 of the way through and it's gone places.
It's gone places?
It's so... I've also been reading her. She has a really big Twitter presence, and she's been talking because I guess there was a big book convention in New York recently.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we didn't mention that in our news segment because neither of us went, and it's a really big convention, so we can't keep up with like what's happening there. But yeah,
maybe next year we can go as press.
BookCon and Book Expo.
Yeah, maybe next year we can go cover it. That also involves flying over to New York.
Dreaming.
And she's been doing a lot of press for the book and kind of talking through her process. And first of all, I realized she's still in college. She's a very young author, which is pretty awesome. But it's a fantasy story based on Chinese literature and history. The pitch was like Warring States era China, but it also includes aspects of modern historical China. So there is a big scene that is pretty much ripped straight out of the Rape of Nanjing. The big conflict in the story like is pretty much based on the Japanese invasion of China during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of her story beats takes cues from that conflict. And a lot of it is about just how war like warps people's like the whole point of becoming like a soldier and someone who is trying to survive a war is to pretty much dehumanize the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the conflict in this story is based on that concept.
Yeah, like I've been following R.F. Kuang on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And like I remember her mentioning how like how language plays into colonialism, because mm-hmm. like because colonial Japan, they try to erase their colonies culture and how like there are still remnants of that today in our language, like up until like not that long ago in Korea there were like we still use like Japanese terms and then they like switched it to like mm-hmm. brand new Korean terms, but just how like language plays into colonialism, she like mentioned that on Twitter, and also like how translation works for like characters, right? If you like, because a lot of times they, I don't want to say like books by white authors, but I'm gonna say it like books by white authors, which features a character who's kind of in between two cultures. They don't really write that weird translation process in someone's mind, being yeah. like, oh, okay, like I. First, you have to listen.
I hear in one language, I process in another language, yeah. and I speak back in the first language.
Yeah, right? So I remember yeah. R.F. Kuang like mentioning that, and I'm like, oh, that's true. I don't really read a lot of books where that process is mentioned, because as someone with very like, I'm not fluent in Korean, but I'm like proficient enough,
yeah.
and the struggle is real.
But yeah, that's what I've been reading, and it's leading up to something. So I'm gonna keep plugging away at it while I read.
While you read,
not your sidekick.
How long is the Poppy War?
It's about 500 pages.
Okay.
Yeah, like the first third of the book is kind of like going to fantasy like military school. So it's kind of like Hogwarts ish. There's like different schools.
That's pretty cool.
And then war comes, and then all the kids become. It's kind of like it jumps from book one to book seven, like right away in the first book. Yeah,
that's really cool. And you know, that seems to be your jam, like yeah. Asian inspired fantasy.
I am enjoying it. And
I remember you finished Grace of Kings within like a week, and I was like,
that's like 3 days.
Oh,
yeah,
like 3 days. And I was like, Marvin, that is like a 700 page book.
I think I don't know, things that are, I mean, science fiction fantasy is just kind of like my jam in general. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm
someone who reads like five books at the same time. So
I have that problem with TV shows. I'm like watching like five shows at the same time.
Yeah, but that's like TV shows. Like an episode's like, what, 20 minutes? If it's a drama, it's an hour.
Yeah, but if you haven't caught up in like 8 weeks, that's like a whole night of binging.
But you can finish it in like a night.
I can finish a book in a night.
Yeah.
I read about like, depending on the book, about just under 100 pages an hour if I really put my mind to it.
Yeah, same here. Like 100 pages an hour, 90 pages an hour.
That's like a 7-hour read for Grace of Kings.
Yeah, but then like for me, like I, because I jump books all the time, like, and also like I have other things to do, or I have other hobbies to pursue.
Yeah.
I spend like maybe like an hour or two reading.
My problem is if I've been away for a while, it's hard to get back in.
Ah, I see.
So that's kind of, that's what happens with TV shows too.
Yeah. Maybe like in the next check-in episode, because I'm reading, right now I'm in the middle of reading Starswept by Mary Fan, and I'm also reading When Dibble Met Rishi by Sandhya Menon.
You're getting your YA on, your summer breezy reading?
It's been on my shelf for so long, and I'm like, this isn't going to be like Pachinko. I'm not going to wait a year to finish these books, because there are other books that I want to read.
Speaking of Pachinko, I just found out that they translated that into Korean.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, so if you want to get that for your parents.
I'm so excited. My parents don't read. I don't know how I can be their child, but they don't read. Maybe I will give them the book.
It'll make a good like Christmas present.
Maybe.
It's like a book. But yeah, I guess that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba.
That's a pod.
Thanks for checking in with us, Mira. For those of you who are reading along, don't forget to sound off on our Books and Boba Goodreads group. You can find it by searching Books and Boba at goodreads.com. We do love to hear from our fellow book readers, and if you have anything to share, please use the forums. Again, check out our new website at booksandboba.com and let us know what you think. This podcast was recorded at the Potluck Podcast Studio, located at the offices of Visual Communications. Visual Communications develops and supports the voices of Asian, American, and Pacific Islander media artists who empower communities and challenge perspectives. Some of their annual programs include the Academy Award qualifying Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival, the Armed with the Camera Fellowship, and C3, the Conference for Creative Content. Learn more about them at bconline.org. Thanks also to the Potluck Podcast Collective for letting us be a part of their great network. You can check out other great Asian American hosted podcasts from the collective by going to the website podcastpotluck.com.
Great. Keep reading, you guys.
Thanks for listening. Bye.